Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Local News Roundup. UTPB welcomes new kinesiology chair. The University of Texas Permian Basin has announced that Moran Skalma Sagiv is the new academic chair and graduate program director for the Department of Kinesiology. Skalma Sagiv joins UTPB from North Carolina, where he has been serving as an associate professor of clinical exercise physiology and chairperson at North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University since 2018. His academic degrees include a PhD in exercise physiology from the University of Porto in Porto, Portugal, a master's in exercise science, a B.Ed. in physical education from the Academic College at Wingate in Netanyahu, Israel. OC Board to call election. The Odessa College Board of Trustees will meet virtually in special session noon Monday to call the May 1st trustee election. The places up for election are Place 4, Place 5, and Place 7. Place 4, 5, and 7 are for 6-year terms, the order says. The link and information for the Zoom meeting are at https://zoom.us/s/93709914423. The webinar ID is 97004374290. Passcode is 056061. Man sought in robbery. The Odessa Police Department is looking for a man involved in an aggravated gas station robbery where he fired 2 shots into the floor. The reported robbery happened at 5:04 a.m. January 23rd at the DK located at 600 South Grandview, an OPD press release detailed. Investigation reportedly showed the man fired 2 rounds into the floor and demanded all of the cash from the register. The man then fled the scene with an undisclosed amount of cash. OPD has released surveillance video that can be seen at tinyurl.com/y5mkzvu6. Anyone with information about the robbery is asked to contact Detective K. Thompson at 432-335-4609. Obituaries for Saturday, January 30th. Floyd Dale Rainey. Floyd Dale Rainey, known as Dale to friends and family of Odessa, passed away January 14th at the age of 88. He was born to H.B. and Myrtle Rainey August 6, 1932, outside of Big Spring in Howard County. Dale married Barbara Ann Jordan in 1962. He was preceded in death by his parents, sisters Lakey Rainey and Eldra Evans, brother Lonnie Rainey, and daughter Tana McIntyre. He is survived by his wife Barbara, children David Roy Rainey and wife Shelley of Odessa, Bobby Rainey and wife Dana of Midland, Lisa Jarma and husband Patrick of Odessa, and Sandra Almager and husband Benny of Leveland. He is also survived by 6 grandchildren, 7 great-grandchildren, and many nieces and nephews. Ronald Edward Ronnie Self. El Paso. Ronald Ronnie Edward Self, 71, passed away Monday, January 25th, after a brief illness. He was born August 2nd, 1949, to Bill and Edna Duke Self. He married Ann Gilliam in 1969, and they were married for 51 years. Surviving him are his wife, Ann Self, daughter Cindy Self of Odessa, son Andy Self and wife Landry of South Lake, 5 grandchildren, his brother Kenneth Self and wife Alicia, brother-in-law Doug Butch Gilliam, and his wife Carrie and brother-in-law Fred Roberson, as well as many nieces, nephews, and cousins. Because of the COVID situation, there will be a celebration of life at a later date to be determined when all can gather and share fond memories. Memorials may be given to West Texas Food Bank or the Permian Basin Rehab Center. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, January 31st, 2021. Section A. OA fight with the city drags on. Odessa legal bill more than $112,000 so far, by Laura Dennis. Saturday marked 1 year since the Odessa American filed a lawsuit accusing City of Odessa officials of violating Texas public information laws by stymieing access to police crime reports that have always been available to the public in Texas. The Odessa American remains embroiled in that lawsuit against the city, which to date has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayer dollars to fight releasing public police reports and probable cause affidavits in accordance with decades-old state laws. The Odessa American is still waiting for justice and the access to which the public is entitled under Texas public records law, said John Bushin, the OA's legal counsel, who is also a national authority on open government and First Amendment law. Instead of trying to resolve the lawsuit in a way that inspires confidence in city government and eliminates suspicion, the city and the Austin lawyers the city has been paying have challenged the power of the Ector County District Court to decide the case. The case currently is awaiting a hearing before the Fifth Circuit of Appeals in Eastland. The city sought an appeal after a visiting state district judge denied their motion to dismiss the lawsuit because, they argued, he lacked the jurisdiction to hear the case. The newspaper sued the city in January 2020, alleging the municipality was violating the Texas Public Information Act, TPIA, by failing to release in a timely manner police reports and probable cause affidavits. Oftentimes, the newspaper was forced to file a Freedom of Information request for routine public reports. The FOI requests and reports frequently peppered with redactions by the city, were usually referred to the State Attorney General's office for review, a move that only added to the delay in basic crime information getting to the public. The city began this practice after the 2019 Labor Day weekend mass shooting in Odessa, and some city representatives later explained they were upset that local news organizations had access to the names of the shooting victims so soon after the tragedy. As a matter of practice, news organizations publish the names of victims in such cases after they have been provided by law enforcement officials, who only release the names after notifying the victim's next of kin. Some headway has been made during the last year as far as the city releasing police reports more quickly, but reports continue to have certain information redacted, that is, public information, and some reports still take longer than they should to be available. OA publisher Patrick Canty said the newspaper's fight with the city is not just about information that the news media has a right to, but also information that any member of the public should be able to easily access. It's the law. City officials have long mounted a whisper campaign that the OA seeks to publish names of sexual assault victims and minors who are victims of crime. That's simply not true, Canty said. TPIA laws clearly indicate what information is public and that an FOI is not required to access information, as it is always public. The OA has never published names of sexual assault victims or children who are crime victims, Canty said. They are simply lying, trying to muddy the water of a legal argument they can't win. And what's really outlandish about this lie is that they are trying to illegally control access to public reports that have always been open to everyone, not just the news media. It runs counter to what other cities in Texas have always done. Mayor Javier Hovind, who took office in December and was not part of the city council that directed city staff to withhold information, on Wednesday declined to comment, saying he needed to speak to legal counsel and that he was now on the other side after taking office in December. He said he hadn't seen any of the documents from the lawsuit and that he doesn't read the Odessa American, so he doesn't know what the lawsuit entails. He did say he would get with the legal department for more information and that he felt the council should discuss the matter after newly elected Councilman Steve Thompson and City Attorney Natasha Brooks are back at work. Both have been out with illness. Screenshots from Facebook comments during the election showed Hovind at one point wrote of the lawsuit, quote, "On this issue, I side with the OA," end quote. Another screenshot shows Hovind writing that he had asked the OA for clarity and have expressed to settle the dispute to reporters as well as this case. It has little to no merit. I fall on the side of transparency and full disclosure, truth. In October, visiting Midland Judge Rodney Satterwhite took only a few days to review arguments and deny a dismissal motion by the city, ruling that the OA's lawsuit should be allowed to proceed, a decision the city appealed to the appellate court in Eastland. As the legal bills and bad press kept piling up for some elected officials who were seeking office, the city cut ties with the Austin law firm Cobb and Counsel prior to the election, but not before racking up more than $100,000 in bills. The city will now apparently rely on lawyers from the city attorney's office as the case winds its way to the Eastland Appellate Court. City of Odessa attorney Natasha Brooks filed a formal motion for substitution of city attorney for the Cobb and Counsel firm. It is unfortunate taxpayers must continue to foot the legal bill for a city that continues to make it difficult for the news media and those very same taxpayers to have unfettered access to police reports and records that by law have always been available to the public, Canty said. Instead of pouring more public money into an appeal, the appeal should be dismissed and the city should pay for the OA's legal expenses, as Texas public records law requires a party to do when that law is violated. This is not the first time the city and the OA have been embroiled in a lawsuit. In the OA's 2017 open meetings lawsuit, the city was ordered to pay $12,500 of the OA's legal expenses in 2018 and to keep audio recordings of all closed-door meetings instead of written summaries, making it easier for the public to hold the officials to account if future violations of the Texas Open Meetings Act seem apparent. Representing the OA in the current lawsuit is John Bushen, a national authority on First Amendment law, Midland attorney Randall Rouse, and Houston attorney Jeff Nobles. Advanced Academics, Part of Educational Planning by Ruth Campbell. 17-year-old Odessa High School junior Isabella Velasquez joined the International Baccalaureate program because of her two older sisters who were both in it before her. Both are in college. They're really smart and great, plus really hardworking, so I was like the IB program would help me become that too, Velasquez said. She has one younger sister who is a freshman at OHS. Velasquez is in color guard and academic decathlon. It's pretty hard, Velasquez said. There's a lot of writing, but so far it's fun. I mean, CAS. That's really fun. CAS stands for Creativity, Activity, and Service. Velasquez says IB, the International Baccalaureate Program, keeps her busy and there is a lot of writing. Time management is an issue, but the program is helping with that, and she said it will help her when she goes to college. Advanced Placement IB Coordinator Melissa Roth said they are trying to raise awareness of the opportunities available to students in advanced studies. In a normal year, I would be setting up parent meetings, Roth said. This has not been a normal year at all, and so we've been adding to the IB's website, which can be found on the OHS webpage. There's a banner that goes across the page with a lot of things in it. There is an IB link. Then it's also on the bottom left-hand side of the links. They also visit private and charter schools to see if students may be interested in IB. There are about 80 freshmen through senior students in International Baccalaureate program this year, which Roth said is relatively small. The pandemic had quite an effect on students' confidence in their abilities. We lost a lot of students as parents reevaluated their own situations. We want to reach out and remind students about the program. And pandemic or not, IB has made many adjustments around the world in response to the pandemic. They've made curricular adjustments in the assessments and certainly have created quite a plethora of resources for virtual learning for faculty, Roth said. She added that what sets IB apart is the mission statement, which is about understanding differences, making the world a better place, and recognizing that everyone is part of a global community. With advanced placement, Roth said there is an assessment at the end of the year that is one day and a few hours long. IB also has exams, but there is one for every course. There are also components of the assessment process that are application-based. So, for example, in English, students actually do oral recordings of literary analysis, and those are submitted to IB, Roth said. For math, there's a mathematics investigation. Students have to apply some of the principles they've learned in math, create a study, follow through, gather the data, and analyze it, she said. Science is usually a student-designed experiment. However, because of COVID, one of the things that's changed is that they can do a literature review instead, or virtual experiments. Our school just purchased Labster, so all students have more access to online experimentation, Roth said. Roth said the program is trying to focus educators on teaching students how to learn. The measurements often include analytical thinking, reflection, and application. We would love to grow this program, Roth said. We really had plans for starting to grow it this year. We talked about it, and then COVID came. IB also opens the door to the vast variety of universities. Advanced placement has a whole gamut of courses, and students get to choose their strength. If I'm a wonderful student and math comes easy, that's something I'm very comfortable with. I can take an AP math course, Director of Advanced Academic Services, Omega Loera, said. She added that there are many options for students such as dual credit, AP, and career and technical education. We have great programs in our district to offer to students to meet their individual needs, Loera said. Roth said the deadline for signing up for IB is February 15th. That way, they can get their educational planning set and get their transfers if they're coming from another school. Educational planning. Educational planning is designed to assist students as they make decisions in preparing for their middle school and high school educations and their careers after graduation. ECISD counselors are currently contacting students and parents to help with these plans. Parents should contact their child's counselor often during this time to make sure course requests and schedules are accurate. From February 1st through 5th, students will review information with middle school counselors. Students will submit course requests through Google Classroom with elementary counselors. This is the link to contact the Guidance and Counseling Department. https://www.ectorcountyisd.org/domain/156156. For students in 8th through 11th grades, we are using a new tool called Naviance to guide you through the high school planning process. ECISD to have team building training. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will meet virtually at 5 p.m. Tuesday for annual team building training. Due to health and safety concerns related to COVID-19, the meeting will be held via video conference or telephone call. The meeting will include opening remarks by Superintendent Scott Murray, public comment, and annual team building training with the Center for Reform of School Systems, CRSS. Local News Roundup. Fundraiser. Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, PBALLC, and Midland College Library will welcome Austin-based author Rebecca Manley for a special virtual author series event at 7 p.m. February 9th. Manley is a coordinator for the Texas Center for the Book, part of TSLAC, Texas State Library and Archives Commission, but is originally from Midland. The event will feature Manley's newly released book, Alexandra and the Awful, Awkward, No Fun, Truly Bad Dates, picture book parody for adults at Ulysses Press. The free event, hosted by Local News West 9 anchor Tatum Gwynn, will also include a Valentine's raffle basket as a fundraiser to benefit PBALLC. Approximate value, $1,133.45. If you are interested in purchasing tickets for the raffle, visit https://events.pbalc.org/event/valentines-basket-raffle/. Tickets are $25. Drawing will take place February 9th. You do not need to be present to win. To register for the event, visit http://bit.ly/gaps-2-9-21-reg. For more on the author, visit RebeccaManley.com. Bustin' for Badges. Bustin' for Badges has scheduled the 2021 Clay Shoot fundraiser benefiting local law enforcement, April 15th and 16th. Registration is now open for sponsorships at bustinforbadges.org. Obituaries and death notices for Sunday, January 31st. Daniel Vincent Younts. Daniel Vincent Younts, 61, passed away at home Sunday, January 24th, following a brave battle with cancer. Born June 26, 1959, in Wiesbaden, Germany, the third son of the late Donald Eugene and Vivian Arlene Younts. He married Wendy Miller in 1979 in Odessa. Dan was preceded in death by his wife, Wendy, his parents, Donald E. and Vivian A. Younts, his elder brother, Donald Eugene Younts II. He is survived by his children, son and daughter-in-law, Daniel Vincent II and Amber Christine Younts, daughter Bonnie Suzanne Younts, and son Christopher Bailey Younts, in addition to his brother and sister-in-law, David Stewart and Willa Cherise Younts, sister Nancy LaVon Younts, and brother Douglas Marcus Younts. A memorial service will be held Friday, February 5th at 2 p.m. at Northside Baptist Church in Odessa. Memorial gifts may be made to Northside Baptist Church. Glenda Ruth Wright. Glenda Ruth Wright passed away December 19th. She was born July 14th, 1944, to Ruth Klinger Walker and Andrew Glenn Walker. She married Kenneth Wright in Odessa in 1967. She is survived by her husband of 53 years, Kenneth Wright, cousins Martha K. Dotson of Weatherford and Sandra Davis of Stephenville. A memorial service will be held Tuesday, February 2nd at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. In lieu of a donation, please send to St. Jude or Odessa Animal Shelter. Robert Gene Cook. Robert Gene Cook, 84, of Odessa, passed away Tuesday, January 26th. He was born July 1st, 1936, in Odessa, to Norvin J. Cook and Edith May Boland. He married Laura Janet Stanhope. Surviving him are his wife of 61 years, Janet, his son Michael Allen Cook, and daughter Laura Gardner and husband Mark. He was preceded in death by his parents and brothers Frank Ray and John Dwight. No services have been scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Melba Laureen Preston Sykes. Melba Laureen Sykes was born in Hale Center, August 18th, 1930, to Arnett Carey, A.C., and Dosha Faye Preston, and passed away Saturday, January 23rd. Melba married Abbott B. Happ Sykes in 1951. She was preceded in death by her husband, Abbott B. Happ Sykes, her middle son, Stephen Preston Sykes of Odessa, two of her three siblings, her sister, Quifa Lewis of Springfield, Missouri, and a brother, Carl Preston of Abilene, and her parents, A.C. and Dosha Preston of Big Spring. She is survived by her daughter and son-in-law, Judy and John Dalton of Cloudcroft, New Mexico, two sons, Barry of Odessa and Nathan of Providence, Rhode Island, her remaining sibling, Margie Weller from Denver, Colorado. She is also survived by three grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts can be designated to the Youth Ministry of Grace Christian Fellowship in Odessa. A celebration of Melba's life will be Wednesday, February 3rd at 1 p.m. in the Sanctuary of Grace Christian Fellowship. Burial will follow with a graveside service at Sunset Memorial Gardens. To send condolences, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Bill Hall, Sr. Bill Hall, Sr., 86, passed away January 24th. He was born February 12, 1934, in Bonanza, to Joseph Hall and Sarah Elizabeth Watson. He married Pauline Hall. Bill is survived by his wife, Pauline, of Odessa, daughter Paula Blair, and husband Bob of Visalia, California, sons Bill Hall Jr. and wife Tanya, Mark Hall and Kelly Hall, and wife Elizabeth of Odessa, 8 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, Joseph and Sarah Hall, a daughter, Diane McKenzie, and a sister, Peggy Nance. Visitation will be Monday, February 1st, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Purchase Funeral Home in Odessa. Memorial service will be February 2nd at 10 a.m. at Kingston Avenue Baptist Church, with burial following at Ector County Cemetery. Death notices. Hector Hernandez. Hector Hernandez, 64, of Odessa, died Thursday, January 21st, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland. R.C. Paulette, Jr. R.C. Paulette, Jr., 86, died Thursday, January 28th, in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Donald Ray Warner. Donald Ray Warner, 63, of Odessa, died Tuesday, January 26th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, February 1st. Analytics Director helps keep UTPB on track. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. University of Texas Permian Basin's Executive Director of Strategic Analytics, Michael Chavez, aims to help his institution grow in terms of enrollment and student success. Data is an integral part of that. Quote, "My job is to inform the university community about data points, being more strategic about data points, pooling data, and explaining it to individuals so it can be actionable, working with multiple departments at one time, and developing what I call nudge campaigns," Chavez said. He segments populations by zip code and demographics to get an idea of what the students are like and send different nudge campaigns to them. Quote, "I've done some analysis when students are more likely to look at their emails, their text messages. I pull data of when students are logging into their portal, when students were more likely to open their email or text message. That increases our yield rate in terms of enrollment and also retention and graduation rates," Chavez said. Using the times and days students are logging into their portals, for example, can help the college recommend things to the students. Quote, "It's sort of like what Netflix does if you watch Netflix or Amazon. If you've seen this movie, you probably want to see this movie, so after some analysis, we knew that students that took this course would also need to take this course," Chavez said. He said the information is kept internal and used only for students in a way that's aimed at promoting student success. Chavez started in this newly created position at UTPB full-time in August. Before arriving in Odessa, he was Vice President of Student Success at Lone Star College, Montgomery, in the Houston area. He has more than 20 years of higher education experience. Quote, "We have a very aggressive strategic agenda for the university, and we need analytics to guide our progress and to diagnose challenges. Michael brings expertise in sophisticated analytics. His role is to drive our strategic plan forward by developing a decision support system for all aspects of our work, UTPB President Sandra Woodley said in an email. A first-generation student and graduate of New Mexico Junior College in Hobbs, New Mexico, Chavez says he has dedicated his career to closing the access and achievement gaps in higher education. He earned doctorates at New Mexico State University in Higher Education Administration, a master's in educational counseling, and a bachelor's in psychology. Chavez completed a second master's degree in business analytics from Syracuse University in 2018. Along with Lone Star College, he has served in various leadership positions at Arizona Western College, Alamo College, and Midland College, information on the UTPB website said. His parents were migrant workers, and he graduated from high school in Pecos. He has lived all around West Texas in southeastern New Mexico, and most of his family lives in the area. Chavez and his wife Heather have two children. Heather Chavez just earned a second master's degree in data analytics from UT Rio Grande Valley. Their son is on the Kid Craddock radio show and has a journalism degree from the University of Texas at Austin, and their daughter graduated from Texas A&M University Corpus Christi and is an accountant working for a large corporation in the Woodlands. One of his goals for UTPB is completing development of an intelligence center and training the university community to use the data. Quote, "My goal is, I call it democratization of the data, throughout the university where our president, our deans, vice presidents have access to data. When they're asked questions, they can easily pull an app up and see where we are in terms of our key performance indicators," Chavez said. Deans want to know which programs within their college are high-producing or low-producing. Chavez said the deans will learn how to access the data and analyze it. Eventually, he said, he wants to create a data camp where UTPB can educate surrounding colleges and universities about what they are doing with data. Quote, "We signed a memorandum of understanding with both Odessa College and Midland College about sharing data so we can increase the number of students that transfer from those two community colleges to the University of Texas Permian Basin." Quote, "I have great relationships and good friends at both institutions just because Odessa and Midland have a friendly competition. So when I was here, I would see a lot of my colleagues at the basketball and volleyball games, especially when Odessa was playing Midland," Chavez said. COVID vaccination clinic at Radliff. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Originally, this week, I was going to write about heart health. February is Heart Health Month, and a subject near and dear to my, well, heart. But I will write about that next week. The only thing I will say on that subject today is February 5th is Go Red Day, the day the American Heart Association asks everyone to wear red. That day is to remind us of the importance of heart health for everyone, but especially women's heart health. Please wear red on February 5th and think about ways you can improve your heart health and encourage your loved ones to do the same in 2021 and beyond. The reason I changed my mind is I was able to help at the Radliff Vaccine Clinic in person. I have done several community drives for health and done healthcare mission trips for disadvantaged people in many areas. But this one will stick with me for a very long time, because more than anything I have ever participated in before, this one felt like a victory. You, I am sure, have developed your own opinions about COVID, and that is okay, but mine is I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. Yes, many people come through it just fine, but for some reason, one which we really haven't figured out yet, some people get incredibly sick. We know age and comorbidities are part of it, but at the same time, I have seen young, previously healthy people suffer and perish from this awful disease. I have seen families lose not just one person, which is too many, but multiple family members to this awful disease. I can think of few things that are worse on patients and families than COVID at its worst. To add to that, as healthcare provider, when you do everything you can and you keep losing people over and over with no end in sight, it eats at you. There is no training or preparation that can make people immune to that toll. And then comes the vaccine. And finally, there is a little tiny light down at the end of a very long, very black tunnel. The Retlef Mass Vaccination Clinic and all the other vaccination sites across Ector County are making that light brighter and closer with every injection. Today, I want to talk a little bit about the people that are making that possible and say thank you. First and foremost, I want to thank the people that come to get vaccinated. None of this happens. The pandemic doesn't go away. Life doesn't return to normal without the wonderful people who wait in lines and stick out their arms to get vaccinated. I can never say thank you enough for taking the time to get vaccinated. Second, I want to thank everyone who has worked out at the Retlef Clinic and in the smaller vaccine clinics across Odessa. It has been a huge effort with hundreds of people working together as a team for our community. This would not have been possible without that massive team effort. Those teams are people from Odessa Fire Rescue, Odessa Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Department, ECISD, the city, the county, and both hospitals, and countless other volunteers from across the community. At Retlef, the goal was to give 2 vaccinations a minute, and considering they are giving between 1,500 and 2,000 injections in about 6 hours every day that they have been open, I would say that team is very, very close to that goal. It is magnificent to watch. I was told by someone, quote, "You all could give Chick-fil-A lessons on efficiency." Is there a better compliment for getting things done quickly and well in a drive-through format than that? So, to all of you, not only thank you, but great job. If you are planning on getting a vaccine, please remember a couple of things. Please make sure you are eating, drinking, and taking your medications as you usually do. The biggest medical issues at the vaccine drives is not because people are having vaccine reactions, it's people having other reactions because they didn't eat and dropped their blood sugar, had other medical issues because they didn't take their medications, or because they are dehydrated because they haven't had enough fluids. If you are going to a drive-through clinic where lines are long, I would highly recommend you bring a snack and something to drink. Second, be safe. If it is a walk-in clinic, social distance. If it is a drive-through clinic, drive slowly and watch for people on foot. In both places, follow the directions of the people who are running the clinics and wear a mask and wash your hands or use hand sanitizer frequently. Finally, to keep this going, the vaccination drives need volunteers. You don't have to be in healthcare to volunteer. They need help for all sorts of things like traffic control and runners, just to name a few. If you want to volunteer, please email volunteers@odessatx.gov and let them know you would like to help. They will get back to you. Second, the vaccination drives need participants. If you meet the 1A or 1B criteria, frontline healthcare workers, long-term care facility residents, people over age 65 and/or people over age 16 with a chronic medical condition that puts them at increased risk for severe COVID-19 illness. Please get vaccinated as soon as possible and then return for your second dose.
This is the Odessa American for Monday, February 1st, 2021. Section A, page 3. Local news roundup. Chocolate Decadence. The Aphasia Center of West Texas and Concho Resources has scheduled a virtual Chocolate Decadence February 12th. Reserve your party pack to support Permian Basin stroke survivors dealing with aphasia's everyday communication challenges. For more information, call 432-699-1261 or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/chocolate-decadence. Fundraiser dinner. The Life Center has scheduled a fundraiser dinner featuring speaker Benjamin Watson, former NFL player, author, speaker, and philanthropist, at 6:30 p.m. April 27th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. To sponsor a table, visit www.tlcdonor.org/Odessa. OA News at oaoa.com.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Excessive parathyroid hormone. Dear Dr. Roach, I am an 88-year-old man in quite good health. I spend at least 30 hours a week doing yard work. I have had high blood calcium for many years, usually around 10.7. I take Provastatin and Triamterene HCTZ. My doctor has been a little concerned and has been monitoring it. She sent me to an endocrinologist who did the same. Neither suggested treating it in any way. I have read on the internet that high blood calcium is more dangerous than high cholesterol. I'm not in favor of surgery unless absolutely necessary, even more so now in these times of the coronavirus. Right now, she is getting me in to see a specialist. W. Answer. It is very likely that you have a condition called primary hyperparathyroidism. This is caused by an excess of parathyroid hormone. I suspect one of your doctors has already confirmed this with a blood test. The parathyroid glands, there are usually four, are located, as their name suggests, immediately adjacent to the thyroid glands in the neck. But parathyroid hormone is very distinct from thyroid hormone. Parathyroid hormone is a major regulator of calcium levels in the blood, along with vitamin D.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Monday, February 1st, 2021, etc. Couple feels cast adrift after friend's diagnosis. Dear Abby, my wife and I have dear friends, one of whom has been diagnosed with untreatable cancer. The doctors told him to go home and maximize his quality of life. The first step he took was to completely cut us out. We had been friends for years. They watched the big football games with us at our house. When he was diagnosed, I was the first person outside of his family he called. They stood up with us when we renewed our vows. I have cut cords of firewood for them. We traveled together. Recently, the wife posted on Facebook that when undergoing trials, you find out who your friends really are. We have been tossed aside like worn-out shoes. My question is, when he passes, if we learn about it, would it be appropriate to attend the funeral to say goodbye to this man we dearly love and offer our condolences to the widow? Already bereaved in Kansas. Dear Already Bereaved, Everyone reacts differently after receiving a diagnosis like the one your friend received. Some people reach out for support, but a sizable number do the opposite. They circle the wagons, which may be what this man has done. It would be interesting to know if his wife was aware of the message you were given, because from what she posted, she may not have been. I think it is time to reach out to her privately and ask her how you can be supportive, if only to her. And yes, when he passes, you should pay your respects and offer condolences. Funerals are for the living. Dear Abby, for the past few months, I've been seeing a gentleman in his late 50s who lost his last girlfriend, Vera, in a tragic accident. Her death was less than a year ago, and he is still grieving, which I respect and am not uncomfortable with. My beau has low self-esteem. He thinks the relationship he had with Vera made him a better person, and that without her he will be less so. I understand his sorrow and that he needs more time to sort through his feelings, but if things work out with us and we continue to see each other, I want to know how I can also make him feel like I'm helping him be a better person. He says it was just the relationship they had and that he doesn't know how to put it into words. I don't want to replace Vera or copy her, but I do wish I could understand what she did to help him believe positive things about himself. New girlfriend in New Hampshire. Dear girlfriend, in order to understand that, it would be helpful to see if he can explain the reason for his low self-esteem. Was it hypercritical parents? Difficulty fitting in with peers that started when he was in school? Not receiving enough positive feedback in his youth? Once you gain more insight, you may be able to find the answers you are looking for. Both partners in a relationship should use whatever attributes they have to make each other feel positive. However, please recognize it should not be your responsibility to prop him up on a continuing basis. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren. Write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Horoscopes. Happy birthday for Monday, February 1st, 2021. This year, you will be concerned with stability. You cannot achieve all that you want immediately. This concern needs to be a major focus. If single, you break past a new barrier to become more open and sensitive with others. You will also become pickier about the person you relate to. If attached, the two of you will emphasize your home life more often. You could decide to make a major domestic change. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so. 1. Difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th, 3 stars. You might feel as if your energy is deteriorating as the day goes on. Your concerns also seem to be minimized by others. If you need or want to discuss a key matter, a serious approach and demeanor will make a difference. Tonight, doing your thing. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th. 3 stars. After feeling somewhat like the low man on the totem pole, you decide you need to make a radical change. You discover how powerful a little help from the planets can be midday on. Tonight, leader of the gang. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th. 5 stars. How you define a new situation could change. The more exposure you get, the less likely you are to come up with a winning solution. You might not even want to be involved with the situation at hand. Tonight, make the night yours. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd. 4 stars. Your emotional tenor demands feedback and insecurity starts popping up if you do not receive it. A loved one, who really does care, encourages you to try a new direction. Tonight, TGIF. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, 4 stars. Step back and do not try to push as hard to achieve certain goals. You have a style that naturally draws others closer. You will see what needs to happen as you spontaneously react to different situations. Tonight, keep a stiff upper lip. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 4 stars. One-on-one relating pushes you to identify more often with others. You might not completely understand what is requested by another person, but you will do your best to fulfill that specific goal. Tonight, keep it loose and easy. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 5 stars. You are bound to head in a new direction. If not today, then soon. A series of one-on-one conversations point to a need for some upheaval to get a reaction and evolve to a new level of understanding. Tonight, a conversation might be more important than you realize. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st, 4 stars. You could be ready to venture in a new direction, but the timing does not seem worth it. You could get past a problem if you were willing to open up more. Others would like to know where you are coming from. Tonight, where people can be found. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st, 4 stars. Zero in on what needs to be completed. You might need to clear a lot of your errands and daily work in order to achieve the goal you desire. You might want a friend to help. Ask. Tonight, take a break from your routine. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 3 stars. Be less indulgent and more direct. You know where you are heading and why. Dealing with several people could be difficult because they are difficult. Stop blaming yourself. Tonight, a fun get-together. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th, 4 stars. Defer to a family member who seems to want to run the show. This person might become disinterested when he or she realizes all the responsibility it takes. Tonight, play devil's advocate. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 4 stars. Give up the need to have so much control. You are heading down a new path that could be critical to your well-being. Ask for some feedback from a dear friend, coworker, or loved one. Tonight, head out the door.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.